conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today.
My photos may be filtered, but my mouth never is.
My third eye is open, and baby, I see you.
I was like, did you hear me squeal when you said my third eye? Because I was so excited. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 206. And listen, I am swinging right into this combo because I'm very excited about the energy of my guest. Episode 206, it's the first episode, I have to say before I introduce my guest, of two episodes a week, which is an exciting new chapter for Andy's Girls. We're 200 plus episodes in, and I made an announcement on Instagram this weekend that this is the start of one of Ramona's new beginnings. I have true faith in the AGs, and I am so excited about this new journey. So guys, you must subscribe to the podcast if you're not already, and like the pod 5 stars on iTunes, nothing else will do, and join the AG Patreon so that twice a week can continue and maybe even grow from there. And anyway, add over. Listen, you guys, I'm so excited to be joined by a phenomenal, phenomenal guest who comes to Andy's Girls by way of Clubhouse, which is an interesting introduction to several AGs, I have to say, who I have met through the glory of Clubhouse and these like deep conversations. So I'm so excited to have nationally recognized media strategist and talent relations pro and internationally accomplished journalist and entrepreneur, and also close friend and collaborator of a new New York housewife, which we will get to, none other than Giselle Phelps. How are you, Giselle? Oh, welcome. Welcome to Andy's Girls.
What an intro. Thank you so much for having me on Andy's Girls. And I love that close friend and collaborator. I love that. I'm going to coin that. That's deep.
It's just a little ad lib, just a little je ne sais quoi,
which is what happens on AG. But thank you for having me. Clubhouse friends are so awesome. I'm so glad that we're connected.
And I feel like I didn't know what to expect with Clubhouse. And I was a little bit of like, all right, just kind of like suck it up and like see what happens. And because I didn't know if it was going to be just another thing. Like there are so many versions of social media and interaction. And I'm like, is this going to be like an audio house party app situation? Like, what is this going to be like? And, you know, I am involved with the weekly Friday night Bravo State of the Union that Dave Quinn moderates. And it's been incredibly interesting because we can have these very nuanced, deep conversations, which I wasn't expecting, which is like the bread and butter of Andy's Girls, which is all focused on, you know, the motivations behind women's behavior who we follow on Bravo. But I really wasn't expecting it from Clubhouse. I've been really, really pleasantly surprised.
It's definitely a meeting of the minds. And I was a little late to the party, too. But it is an incredible platform. And I think when you strip away everything and you're just listening to somebody, kind of like podcasting as well, yeah, right? It's super intimate. And it so is. I just find that I have Clubhouse on like when I'm cooking or in the background, and you just kind of like dip into these like really amazing conversations. So yeah, it's cool. It's like what you're doing here.
Thank you. And the wild thing is, you can't record any of it. Like, they know if you record it and they like contact you and like murder you and bury you out back or something in the clubhouse, like
right?
or whatever. Like, they are super, I apparently very, very focused on like the security of it when it comes to making sure that the conversations that we're having don't leave the clubhouse. So
I almost got in trouble.
Oh, really?
Well, when I first joined, before I like knew, I was, mm-hmm, I kind of was like trying to screen record something like a split second, and I got a notification. It was you can't record this or whatever. And it was said like, it was a warning. They were warning me like, don't, holy, you know? Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. And it wasn't even anything like deep. It was nothing deep. It was like in a boring room with like me, you know, and a couple of friends, but they were like, you know, yeah.
I mean, I feel weird sometimes when I'm even taking like a screenshot to post on IG to say like, come join us, and like it shows all of our faces. And even sometimes then I'm like, I hope they don't yell at me because it's just a photo. It's not like the actual audio.
Right.
But they're very protective over their shit, which is good, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I think.
Well, because you're trying
thing.
To cultivate a safe space,
totally,
and you know, yeah. So.
And also they don't want to lose people. They don't want people to be, you know, accessing their content without going into the app too, which I'm sure
is
a big part of it.
And I think there's a lot of journalists in there. So mm-hmm, people are afraid about, you know, things getting reported and yeah.
I feel like, has that happened yet in the Housewives world of any kind of like Page Six yada yada from Clubhouse?
I have not seen anything in the Housewives world yet. But there are definitely journalists who cover Housewives on Clubhouse, right? Because I interact and interface with them on the app. But I think people are just respecting what it is, right? Like, they'll have a conversation with people on the app, but I haven't really seen anything transfer from what somebody said on the app to being printed, you know, in a publication. I haven't seen that happen yet.
I mean, what's so interesting to me with the timing of you being on AG, you've been on the Cal for a couple weeks, and it has been an interesting news cycle relating to Housewives. We saw the trailer for New York get announced, and then 13 minutes later, Bethany announces that her divorce is finalized, which apparently happened in like late January, but just magically, you know, was released through, I think, a People exclusive. And also that People, which she hasn't confirmed on social media, but People also had an exclusive that a source confirmed that she's engaged to Paul, her on and off boyfriend of the last couple years. And it's the timing of it, the strategic imperative on using a few specific publications.
Right.
Is interesting. And it sort of like makes my heart go pitter patter when New York does it, because Page Six has always felt like an honorary New York housewife. And right. Like, even today, Heather Thompson is, you know, had a thing in Us magazine about not getting along with Leah. And then a source was bitching on to Page Six about Heather never fitting in the group and nobody caring that she, you know, left halfway through the season or whatever it was. What's your sense of how some of these housewives use the press in order to stir up attention for their franchises or sometimes get even?
Yeah. So, okay. when Bethany's news came out literally minutes after
13
the
minutes.
Roni news.
13 minutes.
I mean, I know there was tons of talk about that, but honestly, it didn't bother me at all. Like, I just think that's the name of the game. That is just the name of the game. She's a brilliant businesswoman. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, it just is what it is. You're going to maximize a moment, right? And so people talk behind the scenes. There's a lot of sharing of information. And I think if I was on her team, I might have done that too. I mean, I don't know. I just didn't really have a problem with it because I think, like, what is she supposed to wait till the next day because of a trailer? Or, I mean, when you're ready to drop news, you're ready to drop news. I just don't think it really matters.
Oh, I think it was super smart. Like, I was charmed by it. I wasn't upset by it, but there were people like Bethany stans who were like, this has nothing to do with it. She had nothing to do with the timing. This is an accident. You know, like, she doesn't run People magazine.
Well,
and it's like, well, that's not how it works. I would love to get your thoughts on what's
actually
happening behind the scenes.
No, come on now. Let's not act dumb. Okay. Whether or not she knew, whether or not she knew down to like the hour of when they were going to drop it and all that kind of minutia of what was going on at the media outlet. Okay, sure. But come on. Everybody talks behind the scenes. Publicists are talking to publicists. Reporters are talking to reporters. You would know kind of what's in the pipeline, right? You would know what's in the pipeline and what might be coming out this week. So, I mean, she might not have known it was going to drop exactly then, sure, possibly, but come on, you know when it's going to hit in the area of when something else is going to hit.
You know the general timeline, and I think Andy dropped a hint, and the reporter who wrote the piece, or who posted the trailer and the accompanying info on the season to come, I think tweeted something the day before with like apples or something. People were hinting that the next day was going to be the announcement of the trailer. And I saw Bravo accounts saying 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. I think they were off by like an hour, or they were spot on. People knew that it was coming the next day, which is exciting because it builds anticipation.
Exactly.
And it doesn't hurt that if you are somebody who has news to share and you are related to this show in some way, in a huge way, if you're Bethany, of course you're going to want to either ride out some of the waves of attention from that or maybe take some of it for yourself. You know, like that's, as you said,
but Bethany doesn't need attention. Like, you know, she doesn't need attention.
She needs to stay in the news cycle. That is a huge part. If she's no longer on the show, it is not, and even if she's feeling salty or not, and I could see her being in between, not too far on either side, but absolutely.
She needs press, but she doesn't need to be so thirsty for it that she's going to like time it so deliberately with a Housewives announcement.
I hear you.
But I do think that they probably had knowledge of like loosely when that was going to drop. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think both things were kind of probably in the pipeline simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think just, you also have to think from the media outlets perspective, right? Like if I work at Page Six, like, and I know both of these things are in the pipeline, well, I'm dropping them simultaneously because that's like impact and SEO for, you know, clicks and hits on the website. Like you kind of want to stagger those pieces when you're dropping them. So I don't think that she was like, yes, everybody needs good PR, yes, but I don't think that she's like so thirsty that she would really need to be like, we need to drop this an hour after the sizzle comes out. Like, no, you don't. No, I just, no, no.
She may not have turtle timed it to like the hour, but I don't. I could see her being like, this should, I could see her being like, you know, let's give him a little bit of news. Like the same day, the trailer comes out, let's do it. And then somebody at some point was like, okay, this will be really great if it comes out right after. Or they didn't have a choice because they got the information and were told it didn't need to be embargoed. Exactly. Or
I think they wanted it to hit around the same time. Yes, I think they wanted it to hit around the same time. So the ripple, they would get a nice little ripple. But yes, but I don't think it was like so deliberate down to like, this needs to drop an hour after. Like, no, that's just no, no.
Who do you think is the best Bravo celebrity? It could be in or outside of the Housewives realm, universe, etc. Who's the best or most skilled at utilizing the press?
And that Andy.
Okay, tell me how, expand on that a little bit. Expand on that a little bit.
I mean, Andy, yes, he's the epicenter of it all. So, I mean, just his whole empire and career, I mean, that he's built through this franchise, right? Andy literally transformed from somebody who was behind the scenes producing content to a personality himself. Nobody has done it better than the king himself. Like, yes, Andy. And he has a stake in everything. So, yeah.
Do you find it surprising that he has sort of transitioned from the executive suite of it all into talent, plus of course the, you know, work that he does producing The Housewives, because he, you know, retains the EP title?
Well, I think it's very rare. I think that's a rare transition at the level that he's doing it at. Like, you just don't really see EPs and showrunners, like people that are behind the scenes, really becoming personalities and like cultural phenomenons in the way that he has. It's a very rare kind of occurrence, but he's extremely likable, right? And he appeals to so many different demographics. And so I think that he was just really smart and able to leverage that, right? Mm-hmm. And when he was like, when The Housewives was kind of starting, nobody else kind of had the insight and the information that he had. So nobody else could really pull that out of The Housewives the way that he could, because he knew how things were getting done behind the scenes. And so he could pull out that information and the reunions. And so that's kind of what really put him, you know, on the radar, on the map.
When did your Bravo journey begin? When did you, you know, start watching Bravo, either before the Bravo that we know now existed or during that? When did you?
Years ago.
Yes. Well, tell me everything.
Well, what's crazy is I'm from the Toronto area. And so I'm Canadian. And so we had a like weird version of Bravo in Canada.
Is that Hey You? Not to be, is that what I always hear people talk about? Hey You, H-A-Y-U. Oh no, wait, is that for Europe?
That
might be Europe. My apologies, international AGs.
Yeah.
You guys tell me about stuff and then I get them mixed up. Okay.
But so back tell me about 20 years ago, you know, when I was in university, like it was a weird version of Bravo. It wasn't like the US version of Bravo. It was like, it's a strange version. But anyways, we got OC and New York. And so I believe I was in college and New York is what I really started watching. I did watch OC a little bit to start out with. And I was like intrigued, but when New York started, I've been watching New York from the beginning.
And how has your work influenced the experience of watching Bravo? Because certainly have you had interactions with Bravo Lebs? Does that change your experience of being a Bravoholic when you sort of meet them IRL and get a taste of?
It's funny that you ask, because I actually have known several housewives.
Uh-oh.
Before they became housewives.
Oh, I love the journey. When they are yes. just like a rich ass person, but they're not necessarily, you know, known for yeah. TV, and watching that transition. Who are some of the folks that you...
Well, so I used to be a TV reporter in Dallas. And so Leanne Locken is somebody that I was friendly with.
Oh my God.
And I've had lunch with Leanne many times. We've been to many events together. Also Garcelle is somebody that I've known through social media circles. We've had lunch in New York and in LA. And then obviously Ebony K. Williams. So I've known a few housewives mm-hmm. from different franchises before they became housewives. And so that's always interesting to see how, you know, kind of how somebody was prior to and then what they look like on mm-hmm. Housewives. So
it's interesting that those are the three, because all three of them, first off, being from different franchises is really interesting, because I would think that experience is very specific to the franchise that they're on, because those audiences can be very, very different. Like the Dallas yes. audience can be very different to New York, which is very different from Beverly Hills. What was your guidance to them, if any, offer when they told you that they were joining the show?
Well, none of them other than Ebony told me that they were joining the show. Okay, I mean, we don't talk like that. But Leanne, I actually tweeted something at the time, I believe, that like was shady.
Oh, I love.
She tweeted me back like, girl, give it a chance, or something of that nature, you know? So she was like, she wanted me to give it a chance. But I really don't like the Dallas franchise, because I don't think it's an accurate portrayal of the Dallas social scene. Again, like I said, I was on the news in Dallas for several years. I was really kind of out and about in some of the mixes. And I just don't think that it's really an accurate portrayal of what the real Dallas scene is like. I think that it's too white, way too white. Well, now they have Tiffany, but that's a whole other conversation, because I think just how they treat Tiffany on the show is super hard to watch. I've never been feeling Dallas because I know the lay of the land in Dallas. And so I wasn't surprised that Leanne had, you know, parlayed herself onto a role on the Housewives of Dallas, but I wasn't really like here for it either.
Yeah. Where do you think that she went wrong?
On the show?
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
several ways, you know, just, yeah, not being conscious enough. Right. I think. And that's where she went wrong. I mean, she is a very dynamic personality. Mm-hmm. I'll say that, you know, and I will say that she for years has hosted charity events and galas and all that kind of stuff in Dallas. She's been doing that for, that is legitimately accurate. Yes. Mm-hmm. But I think that, yeah, just not being conscious enough, like not being, having like an awareness really of like where we're at, you know, mm-hmm. in the culture and in society. So that might've been where she went wrong. I was never really here for the franchise in general. So to me, it has less to do with Leanne herself mm-hmm. and just the whole franchise. Yeah, I don't like the casting on the Dallas franchise. I don't like the storylines on the Dallas franchise. I just don't think that it represents what the Dallas social scene is truly like.
Which is about... I mean, like the fact that they have a Simmons on the show and a Westcott on the show, is that in any way representative, or is it's like
that is that's part
only?
Of it?
Yeah,
that's part of it. It's a yeah, that's part of it. but I think there's just so much more going on. Like, mm-hmm. for example, Dallas has tons of like athletes' wives and stuff that live there.
We miss all of that.
Exactly. Like, so, yeah, it's huge. Like, there's just tons of athletes' wives. Like, Dirk Nowitzki's family lives there, right? And he has a beautiful wife, Jessica, and she's like really in the Dallas social scene. Maybe she's been asked. She said no. I have no idea, right? Because I'm sure a lot of people have been asked and have said no. Mm-hmm. But I just, beyond her, there's just so many other like amazing women of color that mm-hmm. are like integral parts of the Dallas social scene that I think when you just stick to like a Simmons and a Westcott, it's just such a very narrow slice mm-hmm. that, you know, it kind of, it's like literally representing the Dallas, like mm-hmm. Dallas, the show. It's literally representing like that type of Dallas. And it's not really representing modern contemporary Dallas. Right. Yeah. So that's why I've just never really been into the, I watch it just because I'm nosy, but I never been here for it. Yeah.
It's interesting that you talk about Dallas in that way, because that makes me think a little bit about Andy's public responses regarding Orange County, where he's like, we're taking our time, you know. I think it was Evan Ross Katz, friend of the show, tweeted relatively recently, you know, like cancel Orange County. And Andy responded and said something along the lines of like, don't you mean reboot? And so they're thinking of some sort of restructuring. And my guess is that everybody on that show currently is potentially in danger of losing their job, because they could do a complete restructuring of the franchise, which I think most people would agree is absolutely necessary at this point. It makes me wonder if it's possible to do that with Dallas, because it feels like they have driven the show in such a way that there's almost no ability to do anything but other new people that come into the show.
Exactly.
And that's exactly. not going to change, because there's a pack mentality that's led by, I don't even know. I feel like it's led by all of the vets equally. And unless you are truly almost exactly. rebooting the soul of it, that we're going to get kind of not great content. You know, it's not driving the story forward in that sense, regardless of individual episodes.
They need to completely recast Dallas, completely. And Andy, call me. I would love to help, because beyond even just like the athletes' wives, there's also like a whole church circuit, an elite church circuit
oh my
in
God,
Dallas.
I would love.
Right? Exactly. So like, that's the other thing. You're just not seeing a lot. There's an elite church circuit. There's the athletes' wives. It's just not all, you know, this Highland Park, Preston Hollow, you know, old white money, even though that's like the historic Dallas, contemporary new Dallas and the social scene that's happening is so much more than that. And so to me, just from the jump, it was kind of boring, because it was just giving me very, very old money, white mm-hmm. Dallas. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we transition to Beverly Hills, where you,
yes.
you know, mentioned a relationship with Garcelle. Well, which is like, talk about dynasty vibes. I mean,
yes.
you know, diamonds and rosé.
Like I love trainer. Garcelle. I love Garcelle. We have the same birthday. We have the same birthday. We're
that.
Birthday twins, November 26th. And okay. she's just so cool. Yeah, she's super cool. We met through a mutual friend years ago in LA, and then connected a couple times when she came to New York. I think she's just cool as hell. Garcelle's cool. I love what she's bringing to Beverly Hills. I think that we're going to see more, you know. I think she was kind of feeling it out, mm-hmm. you know, because I think when you come on, you got to kind of, you know, feel it out a little bit. But I thought she brought it. And I think she's going to bring even more heat. I think she's going to bring even more heat.
I have a little bit of a similar concern to what's happening with Dr. Tiffany, albeit very, very different circumstances. that now, because now that Denise is gone, I just have a little bit of
nervousness
that it's going to be, again, a pack mentality, which to me is not interesting. And I'm concerned that the target is going to be Garcelle. I know that she said she got along with Kyle now, but like that doesn't mean anything when it comes to the actual narrative.
It doesn't. But also, I do think the dynamics with Garcelle are different. And because Garcelle herself is, she's like, especially in Black Hollywood, but even in Hollywood at large, like she has been in the game for so long. I mean, she is just legit. Like she's a legitimate star, right? From going back to the Jamie Foxx show and just all the films that she's been in. So I think that it is a little bit harder for them to other Garcelle in that same kind of way, just because she is like legit Hollywood, right? And she used to be married to an agent who was influential and like, you know, so Garcelle isn't just like any rich girl off the street. She comes in with a resume, credibility in the industry. So I think that they, I also think that the women are aware of that. And she's also on a daytime show that's currently airing. So she has a platform to talk about things every day. So I think they're very aware of all those dynamics when they handle Garcelle. So I don't think that they're giving her kind of that same energy that they might give somebody else.
The interesting thing with Beverly Hills is so much of the currency and strategy, because it's based in, you know, quote unquote Hollywood, because so many of these women are former recovering child stars or current actresses and hosts and whatever it is, that joining the show and bringing with you a genuine celebrity name brings with it a lot of power that these women respect when it comes to Garcelle and when it comes with to Denise. That also means that the stakes are different, because so many of these housewives, they're fighting about the show or to stay on the show or to be the people's favorite when it comes to the show. But if you come into this specifically in Beverly Hills and you're a Denise and you're a, or a Garcelle, and you don't need the show in the ways that some of these other women do, it opens up this weird alternate universe, because so much of the drama on Housewives to me is the women dealing with the fact that they're trying to fight for alpha typically, or to be on the right side in terms of the audience, but they don't necessarily have an exit plan or they don't want one.
Right.
And then you have a Denise or a Garcelle who are like, I don't need to be here. This is not the biggest part of me when it comes to my professional life, which can sometimes change the conversation, because you can literally leave the room, versus other people who don't have the benefit of celebrity behind them to protect them from participating in the plot, which is, you know, the own the specific challenge, I think, to BH.
No, That's an astute analysis, my friend. that's an academic level analysis. Absolutely. And I think that is the case with Garcelle for sure, because she knows there are certain things she doesn't need to engage in, or she doesn't need to go so far. And so that's the energy that she rolls with, because she doesn't need to be the alpha in the room, because she has, you know, so many other things going on. But I personally enjoy that little bit of energy because I, like you said, I think it ruffles the feathers of the others, you know? So that in itself is kind of like, I enjoy it. It's tasty, because it's like their feathers are ruffled by the fact that this person's a little bit unbothered, you know? And so that in itself creates an interesting dynamic. And I think you're actually going to see probably a little bit of that on Roni.
Okay, we've got to talk about Real Housewives of New York. So tell me about your relationship with new housewife who's just coming out of the gate. I mean, I watched the trailer just now, right before we recorded, for like the 100th time since it came out. And you have a relationship with Ebony K. Williams.
Yeah.
You know, so, new New York housewife. Tell me everything.
So, yeah. So, literally for the last 4 years, I was Ebony's publicist. And she came to me when she was still at Fox News. So I'm not doing her PR right now or for Housewives. So, but that's my girl. We're freaking frat. We're great. Like you, you said something collaborator or whatever. I was like, that's a good title. Yeah.
I don't even remember the shit that comes out of my mouth. Whatever
you said was a great way to describe it. But anyways, we're great strategic partners. But yeah, that's my friend. And I mean, so yeah, I literally have been working with her for the last 4 years. When she was at Fox, she had a book coming out. And that was just supposed to be a one little project for her book, pretty powerful. And it evolved into a really awesome collaborative relationship. And so I was with her while she filmed season 13. And so, yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be cool.
How does that relationship work? Because you yourself are a Bravo fan, Bravo-holic, you know, super viewer. And now you have a friend and client collaborator who is filming the show, who is probably calling you to be like, so-and-so, you know, this shit was crazy today, blah, 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 blah. Or I don't know what's happening with this person. What parts of you are participating in that conversation the most? Is it the viewer who knows Ramona, who knows that she's insane from watching the show for so long? Is it the publicist, you know, PR side of you where you're like strategically when it comes to the narrative that the audience is going to be thinking about and like what we can push when the show goes on? How does that work in your brain?
Well, that's an amazing question. And that happened a lot while they were shooting, right? And I would say there's actually three hats wearing, because you're wearing a Bravo, you know, fan hat, publicist, and a friend.
So, I'm his friend.
So it's kind of, you know, you're like, okay, what am I tapping into here? But it would depend on what was happening. Sometimes it was something that needed a strategic approach from, you know, an overall brand, you know, PR perspective. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's something that they're literally just venting, right? Or telling you as a friend what happened. So you're just listening. And then sometimes it is as a problem. I mean, yes, obviously I want all the tea. So I'm always getting all the tea and I want to know.
Of course.
But this, I'll give you some tea. So we would start laughing because I'm telling you, Sarah, throughout the whole time they were taping, when Ebony would call me and we'd be discussing whatever was going on, my saying to her all the time would be like, is that on tape? And she'd be like, yes, Giselle, it's on tape. And I'd be like, oh. Then like the next day I'd be like, is that on tape? Like, whenever she told me, I'd be like, is that on tape?
Because you were so surprised by, like, what was being said. That it was, like, so wild.
Whenever you get a chance to talk to Ab, ask her about that. Be like, Giselle told me she was always asking you, is that on? That was my thing. She'd be like, yes, Giselle, it's on tape. It's on tape.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah. Because I'd be like, every time we talk, I'd be like, wait, so that's on tape? Yeah.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah. So that's, she'd be like, girl, yes, it's on tape. Everything's
like,
on
tape.
She's
like, stop. I'm recording a reality TV show. It's probably getting picked up.
Yeah. Or at first also too, at first when she would call me when she was shooting, I was paranoid. I'd be like, are you mic'd? You know,
Yeah, of course. Yes,
exactly. Yes. I'd be like, are you mic'd? Are you Mike?
How did you counsel her through the process of agreeing to do the show? You know, did they come to her?
Well,
what was that like? And did you help her prepare for it? And what does that look like?
I mean, Ebony knows what she wants, right? Mm-hmm. You'll learn that when you guys watch, you know, she's very you know, she has a clear vision for herself. So she knows what she wants to do. But yeah, I mean, it was a years long process. And so, yeah, it was kind of just, you know, something that we all, you know, everybody on her team kind of weighed in on, but at the end of the day, she, you know, she made that decision. So, but everybody, we all gave honest input and whatnot, but yeah, she's very, very focused. So
did the picture in, did you have a picture in your head of what her story would look like on the show? And how did that compare with the trailer?
The trailer actually is not giving away any plot.
Really?
No, it's not.
Meaning there's more story that wasn't even tapped into?
The trailer is so surface. You're not seeing it. Yeah, there's so much more coming. It's not giving away anything, which I love about it, because I felt like, for example, the Atlanta trailer.
Okay.
I felt like the Atlanta trailer gave away so much. Like we knew that the whole season was around Bolo, right? Mm-hmm, and we all knew that from the jump from the trailer. The Roni trailers, no, like it's not telling you. You guys are going to be so surprised. It's going to be so good because it's really not giving away anything.
Well, I mean, I think that also taps into the tabloid / press of it all, because think about the Radar Online and Puppygate with Lucy Lucy. Think about Bolo. All of that stuff broke during production online. So we knew the likely biggest part of the story months prior to seeing the actual episodes play out. With New York, I don't know that I had a lot of info on stuff. If there was like a big moment, I don't think it was covered online. If it was, I'm forgetting about it, which does leave the space for this stuff where, yeah, we may not, if there is like a big, larger narrative that's happening,
I think, well, just
knowing, I have no idea of what it could be.
Oh gosh. Yeah. There's lots.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest part of the, I mean, listen, I need to hear a little bit about this, because I think that Ebony factored in a big way into the trailer. And a large part of that was in her conversations and kind of accountability sessions, shall we say, with Ramona.
Yeah, that's so, you guys are just really in for a treat, because when it comes to Ebony and her storyline, those interactions that you saw in the trailer, you know, where she's confronting Ramona on, you know, those kind of like help, race. Yeah. And stuff. That is like, I think that's just like, that's really just a fraction of her storyline. Again, I don't know what the edits are going to look like, but obviously I know what was filmed.
Sure.
And so based on what was filmed and who else I know, you know, is a part of that, it's just a fraction.
What's the deal with Ebony and Lou? Does that factor into it at all? Because there's that like awkward moment during the trailer of Ebony saying, you know, she's talking about her education, which is she's a lawyer and all of her media work, she's obviously highly educated. And there is some awkwardness, some tension with her and Luann that might just occur during the brunch, or that might carry over. Is that a part of what I'm hearing? Is there's like some sort of larger picture? I'm trying to get a sense of what is missing when it comes to potential tension existing within, you know, this universe that she's joined.
I mean, I think there's so much going on. And I think just Ebony's own story as it unfolds on the show, like, I think that's what you're not really seeing, right? It's going to be her story that's unfolding that I think is what's going to really capture viewers and pull them in. And I think some of the stuff that you saw in the trailer is like weaved into that. But there's just a lot of good shit. A lot of good shit. That's all I can say. Like, you know, obviously I can't give specifics, but it's like there's so much good shit. Like, I will even say, actually, I was a little underwhelmed by the trailer because I know what has been filmed, right? Mm-hmm. So I was a little underwhelmed. I was like, oh, okay. But it is a good kind of highlight overview, mm-hmm. but there's just so much. I think it's going to be good because I think viewers are going to just learn and see so much in each episode mm-hmm. that hasn't been given away.
How was her experience influenced by the fact that we're in, you know, a global pandemic right now? She wasn't able to have the typical filming yeah. experience of any franchise because of, and being in New York too, which is very specific. New York right now, they're two highest states in the country with COVID infections are New Jersey and New York. You know, global epicenter for a hot minute, a little bit longer. How did that change potentially or shape her experience filming? Because you're dealing with the yeah. stress of trying to survive a pandemic and also this show, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot. I think it was stressful. I think it was mm-hmm. really stressful. I think that, well, I mean, she's already on the record saying this. I mean, she had COVID. She had COVID like in end of March, April. So that was an experience of its own, right? Wow. Just actually having it. And
when did they film? Do you remember?
They didn't start filming till like the fall, like September-ish.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. So that she had a long period of time in which to hopefully.
Yeah. Recover. And so she has antibodies and mm-hmm. everything. So, but yeah, I think it was stressful, right? Just going through that experience and then just with, events and stuff like that. Like, my company actually helped her curate one of the events that you will see on the season.
Okay, great.
And so, you know, it's just the logistics of that, everybody having to get COVID tested mm-hmm. and, you know, so I think it did make, you know, things stressful, like, cause even, you know, my people had to get COVID tested and, you know, it was like, it was a thing. So I think for mm-hmm. everybody, cast, crew, vendors or whatever, like anybody that touches it, right? It was stressful because it just had like more red tape around every shoot that they did, right? So yeah.
And also she had this thing and you're in a cast with people who are kind of like not necessarily non-believers but like 100% non-carers. I mean, I just rewatched last season's reunion.
Right.
I don't know why. It was actually a lot better than I remembered the first or second time around. And there's Ramona screaming, "I don't put masks on at the beach. I don't." When Leah's like literally being like, "You were in a restaurant. Like, we're not talking about the beach.
Right.
We're talking about you just wandering around living your best life." And Ramona is, I mean, to use one of her new favorite words, gaslighting. You know, she's like distorting the reality in order to try to silence a response or just create a new narrative. And then you have somebody joining the show who works in the media space who had just recovered from COVID itself. I mean, that's got to be a little tricky because there's a lot to take on with Ramona. I would think she's like a relatively triggering presence and has a way of interacting with people that's not necessarily based in basic respect, let alone nuance. I mean,
right.
There's a lot to bring with it that's like specific to COVID and also the environment that we're now in, you know?
But I think the thing that Ebony brings, like that you kind of alluded to when you're talking about Beverly Hills as well, is like that experience with mm-hmm. productions, right? So mm-hmm. like this isn't somebody who's new to production. So mm-hmm. she just knows the lay of the land and the name of the game, you know? So Ebony also tapes a weekly show for Revolt every week. So, I mean, she's working with production. She tapes her podcast with iHeart every week. So even though she's doing Roni too, it's like, yes, you're going to get all these interesting personalities and dynamics, this, that, and the other, but she's so used to this. So she does, I think, come in with that energy, just like we were talking about Garcelle. That's a little bit different because she's not fazed by certain things that like other people might be fazed by.
And yeah. yet there's also, when it comes to reality TV, the element of agreeing to give up control. And, you know, I host a podcast. Yes. I have the ability, if I want to take something out or add something in, I can do that. I'm the producer. I get to kind of help paint the picture of each episode. And this weekend I was in a photo shoot and had literally no control over anything, which I agreed to. I was a participant, but it was also just a reminder to me that in this thing where I talked about some experiences, yada yada, I am realizing in the moment I have literally no control over what this is gonna be. And I'm talking about a very vulnerable experience where I'm talking about very serious things.
Yeah.
And opening up, because I'm essentially at the end of the day, it's like let go and let God, even though I believe more strongly in Manolo Blahnik, but like at the end of the day, it's like trusting in, maybe it's just trusting in the spirit and the vibe of whatever is going to be the result, right? Where like I can,
but that's like any media interview, that's like any, you know, like even right now I'm taping this with you, I don't have editorial control. So that's, you know, I think when you are in the game so deep, mm-hmm. like people are used to that. It's just, it is what it is. It's a little more intense, obviously, because reality, it's your life, like your personal life, and you're filming so much more content. But I think that she's a pro. I mean, there's, you know, she's a pro.
I totally yeah. hear you, but I also think like just that little experience for me is in no way, it sort of reminds me a little bit of this while we're talking, because to be on a reality show to me is very different from other aspects, from podcasting, from yeah. other forms of TV, especially if there's a news angle or information angle to this. Bravo is a very specific universe, and
it
you
is.
Are having to interact and experience with people who you may or may not respect in real life or
yeah.
want to hang out with in real life, and you're sort of allowing yourself to be upset for a significant period of time because of the stakes involved, because of some of the personalities involved.
Yeah.
You do have to interface with these people, and maybe it can be a good thing. Maybe it can force you to care about somebody that you would have in other situations, environments, just been like, you're not for me. It forces you to try to find
That's
a middle
true.
Ground, which is good. But the flip side is, at the end of the day, they're not this isn't an information network. We're not trying to drive a narrative that
I don't know. But I feel like when I was a news reporter, I interfaced with people every day I didn't want to interface with or couldn't stand. I mean, it's just like,
but
that's kind of
the point of it, right? Yeah. Because like that's the difference between yeah. Bravo and all this other shit. Like,
right.
You could be doing an interview with somebody. It could be a couple hours long, and then it gets edited into however many minutes.
Yeah.
And then you don't necessarily have to see that person for the rest of your life. Bravo, you're filming for how many months with these people? You go on trips with these people. It's different.
Well,
it's
it is a bit, yes. But I do think that there are always, depending on where you work, you might, yeah, I don't know. I think that, girl, I've seen so much in my career that I'm like, no, there are instances where you're working, you're seeing those people every day. You can't stand their asses. So yeah, I think it depends on how you treat it, right? Like mm-hmm. whether or not you treat it as a job mm-hmm. or as you treat it as something that is a part of your real life. So I think that that's the key right there, is that I think some people really get, it's their life. Being on the show becomes their actual life.
Yeah.
And then I do think that, yeah. And then I think there are people who treat it like an opportunity, like a job. And so I think that is sometimes the friction you see playing out on the show, because some people are, it is their actual life. This is what they do. It's their purpose. Where some people are just, it's an opportunity and it's a job.
And for some of those people who are like, it's an opportunity and it's a job, that might not land well with viewers who want to see them exist in this universe and not feel like they're constantly being sold a bill of goods, and that bill of goods could be like a sweatshirt line. You know what I'm saying?
Or I think it depends on, as long as you're still being authentic and vulnerable in the situations, right? Yeah. If you go on and you're treating it so much like a job that you're not being authentic, you're not showing people your real life, you're not being vulnerable with your castmates and having real moments, absolutely. Viewers can see through that shit really quickly. But I think you can still treat it like a job and develop authentic connections with people that are real and meaningful and still, you know, show people your true life and not come out the gate with a line of products that just make it look like you, you know, are, it's a home shopping network, whatever. I just really think it depends, you know, who you are and how you navigate that. And it can be a fine line. I think you're right. I think it can be a very fine line. I think the key is authenticity. I think authenticity is the key and actually being vulnerable. And so, if you're not willing to be vulnerable, then going on a show like that and kind of trying to have a facade or a manufactured image that you're pushing, like, no, that shit ain't gonna vibe. That's, you know, and I think we've seen that with different people over the years, right? I think you can be somebody who treats it like a job, like an opportunity, as long as you are still being authentic and vulnerable. I think if you go in there with a manufactured image that you're trying to portray, then that's not going to vibe with the audience. I just think as long as you still have to be authentic, you can't go in there contrived. That's no. Bravo Universe is not about that shit.
Who do you think is the most authentic housewife?
That is a wonderful question. Who do I think is the most authentic housewife? Whew, good question, girl. Let me think about that.
It's a hard one.
I mean, people might not like my answer.
Oh, I love it already. I love a like from another realm of possible. I love it. I love a dynamic, complicated answer. Tell me, who do you think?
I'm changing it as we talk, because
tell me.
It's definitely that's such a good question. Who's the most authentic?
Necessarily mean consistent, you know?
I actually think the most authentic housewife is Candy.
Oh, that's exactly who I was thinking.
Yeah, I think
why do you say Candy?
Because Candy, again, is somebody who doesn't necessarily need housewives, okay?
Exactly.
So she's somebody that came in with that same energy that we've been talking about, that the Garcelle energy, the Denise Richards energy, and to a degree, I would say the Ebony energy. So there's that. And then also, I think she's just been very authentic about who she is and sharing the different aspects of her life with, you know, if you think about Candy and all the other people in her family that we know, like Mama, what's her mom's name?
Joyce,
her aunts who are crazy as hell. Todd, we even knew the previous fiance who got killed. That was like, early on.
Back in the day. Super sad. Yeah.
Her daughter, who we've seen literally grow up, she's been very transparent about her sexuality and, you know, her interests or whatever, you know, she's been very authentic about that and who she is. And, you know, I think she's very authentic. I think Candy knows who she is. And she's just she puts it out there, you know? Yeah.
What was the name that you were going to say where you were like, people might not like this?
Well, I was actually going to say Meanie at first.
Oh, tell me about that.
I was going to say Meanie.
That's a really interesting
answer. She's kind of, it's interesting because she's the other kind of end of the spectrum from Candy. Because I think that she even, she's so controversial, but like, in that is an authenticity because it's like she just is who she is, right? And she doesn't really try to sugarcoat that, and she never has. And you know, she never has tried to kind of sugarcoat who she is. And so whether or not you like it or you agree with her or the things she's done, you know, the relationship dynamics that she's had on the franchise, I feel like she's remained fairly consistent to who she is, right? And she hasn't wavered from that. And I think other people you've kind of seen where they've changed, you know, she's been very consistently Meanie through and through, in the same way Candy's been consistently Candy, right? So yeah, I think she's that's why I almost said her, but then I was like, no, Candy's maybe a little notch more authentic, just because I think of like all the people in Candy's family that we've come to learn about over the years, and like they kind of each all have their own individual journeys at this point on the show. Like even Todd and the Mama Joy's have their own thing. And then, you know, Riley has, like, they have so many storylines just in that family alone. That's why I went with Candy.
When it comes to Meanie has been very vocal about her feelings toward the network and Andy specifically. Do you think that there's space for her to return in some way? And is that something that you'd like to see?
Listen, nothing is, you never know, right? It's business.
Yeah.
It's business and money talks. You can never say never. I think that, you know, obviously that's an interesting, dicey situation, but they need her. I think they need her. I think they desperately need her. Oh, well, that's the other thing. I'm not a fan of LaToya, who's also from Toronto. Yes.
Oh.
We also have mutual. I've never.
Sorry.
Yeah. We have mutual friends, but I've never met her. I've never met her myself, but I'm just not a fan of her on this show. I don't think that she fits in. I feel like she's doing way too much. Way too much. It's just, girl, I don't know what she's doing. She's doing a lot. She's doing a lot.
She feels like one of the least authentic friends of that we've had in a minute. It feels like and the way that Portia looked at her when they sat outside the Halloween event, where Portia was like, I don't know what you're talking about, where there's actual confusion on her face because she can see someone trying to create a narrative and Portia's living in the space of, I think, genuine reality where she's like, this doesn't make sense to me. I shouldn't be a part of in any way your relationship with Kenya. I am not a participant in that. I'm not even a voyeur in that. I don't want literally there. The idea of I'm fighting between, you know, I don't know whose side to be on. And it's like, I don't think Portia necessarily even wants you to be on her side. She doesn't need you in the way that Kenya is
exactly
expressing that she needs, and yet you still betray both of them so that you can straddle this middle ground that you don't feel like you even want that much.
She's giving me, I really want to be a celebrity really bad, and it's just not a good look. It's not doing her any favors. I think that the audience has not really been responding to it very well, right? So yeah, I don't know why she came in with that aggressive energy. Like it's just too much. And yeah, I don't know, she's trying to play both sides of the fence. She gets caught up. She's not loyal to Kenya. That was her in. I don't know, it's a mess. I don't like it. they could remove her. I'd be completely fine. And I'm also just not really feeling Drew either. So like, because Nene was
really
no. I'm very bored with Drew, and just she's not giving me much. No.
And what were you going to say about Nene?
Well, I was going to say, because we came into this conversation via Nene, because like right. I was saying, like, they need Nene back because mm-hmm. these, you know, the people they've been trying to add are just not really giving much and aren't really fit. So, yeah, like, you know, it's interesting. Like, literally, that's how big of a personality Nene is, that you need two people to try and fill that spot, you know, and they're both not cutting it. No.
I mean, this ties in very well with the Satchel of Gold that I have that I want to get your thoughts on. And Satchels of Gold are listener thoughts and feels, questions and concerns that they send my way, either through Instagram DMs or emailing andyscrollshow@gmail.com. And they're named in honor, of course, of Kelly Killorn Ben Simone during her
Crazy Island. Scary Island. That's my favorite episode, I think, of all time. That's my favorite episode.
I mean, yeah. It's an iconic, it is a historic. Yeah. It's like top two or three best seasons, if not number one in Housewives history. So I have a satchel from Mackenzie in St. Louis who says, does it seem like Kenya thought she would replace Nene, but maybe, just maybe, in a softer, kinder, low-key way, Marlo is filling those OG shoes?
Yes!
No one is Nene and will never be, but Marlo is giving me OG vibes. Shady when needed, supportive when needed.
Oh my gosh, yes. When I was watching last night, I was like, and you know what? I've always been kind of lukewarm on Marlo, but Marlo's really giving it to me. She definitely is giving OG vibes. She really is kind of have found her groove there. And I feel like the women kind of turn to her as that OG. She really kind of has like an authority over them. That's really interesting to watch. And I think she's very measured and like still has the good one-liner. She gives us the fashion. I'm actually really standing Marlo this season. And I've always been very lukewarm on her because I do think that when Nene was on, she kind of, you know, paled in comparison a little bit. But now that Nene's out of the equation, yes, Marlo's taking up space in the cast in a way that she didn't before. And she definitely, she is the OG. Like, obviously, Cynthia and Candy are OGs too, but Marlo,
I mean spiritual OGs.
OGs. But yes. Marlo has a different energy to her. That's like she has a different flex. That's like just she just has a different flex about her. That's cool.
And she's been so much more revealing in the past couple seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, hearing what she's been going through as a Munty, as a, you know, caregiver to her nephews, and even like the ways in which she spoke with Kenya when she was like, you hurt my feelings with the room stuff with whatever else. And it's like, we've hurt each other. I don't want to live in this space anymore. Where she's taking up space, but she's also, she's putting up or at least expressing boundaries, which I think is really important. And that scene that she had with Portia, I thought was really interesting because Portia was telling her kind of confusion or hurt about her relationship with Kenya and the timing of it and her feeling that Kenya was using her for a larger strategic purpose. And Marlo was like, yeah, but remember when you and Kenya were getting along and
right
with her when you guys were new moms and you were bonding? Like, I felt I was in your shoes. I felt the way that you felt. Like, that hurt me too. So neither of us are innocent in this. And the, you know, common denominator, of course, is Kenya. Can Kenya be as good a friend to Marlo as Marlo has expressed that she, you know, wants and needs?
There's a vulnerability there now with Marlo.
That
we're seeing. And I think, I think that the production value that editing allows for that more because there's not other stuff going on. Right. You know what? Like, I think not that could have kind of been happening before. We weren't seeing it because there was just other, like, way more dramatic stuff unfolding, right? I don't know. Like, maybe it just wasn't making the show in the way that it is now, right? I feel like there's just more space for it now because you don't have these storylines around Nene. You don't have, you know, there's just...
Yeah, I don't think it could have been possible before with Nene and the cast because, as you said, like, Marlo played a secondary role.
Yeah,
to Nene.
A wingman. She was wingman.
In the ways that Shamia does with exactly. Marsha, except...
Exactly.
Right. Except Shamia is like more in the kind of background of some of this where she's important, but she's much more of an ensemble to me. We haven't seen more of like the individual storyline of Shamia where we've seen more of Marlo's life. And yet she really did play a little bit of a supplicant role. And now she is taking up space.
She's taking up more space. Yeah. And with that is, you know, a little more vulnerability, I think. And, mm-hmm. And that you see that with just trying to mend relations with Kenya and, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think also like that tends to happen with the housewives, the deeper into the seasons they get.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Because I think like, at first, you're kind of like learning the lay of the land and where you fit mm-hmm. in and all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And I think that that kind of naturally happens, like, you know, because what's Marlo probably must be 5 seasons in at this point, right? So I think she's just like, she knows who she is on the show.
Who is your spiritual housewife? Who's the housewife where you're like, there is just this person who I just feel like represent, for better or worse, by the way, because there can be, I have complicated spiritual housewife connections where I'm like, this isn't necessarily a great tribute to myself, but it is what it is.
Wow.
Who do you think is your spiritual housewife where you're like, I see myself in them, or they feed a part of my soul where I wish I was more like this,
goodness,
the way that they behave on the show?
I could go several directions with this answer. Wow. Okay. Let me think about this. My spiritual housewife. Well, I mean, I feel like if we're talking spirit, I mean, I very much so want to possess the spirit of the Grand Dame. So, I mean,
Really?
Who doesn't? You're the Grand Dame. I think, yes. And I think that my friends kind of view me as somebody who's very wise and a little bit bougie. Mm. So I would think the Grand Dame, yes, definitely. I have big Grand Dame Karen Huger vibes. Yes.
I love
yes,
that.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, she is an icon.
Yes.
She is an icon.
So, for sure, yeah.
Do you have a housewife trigger? That person that, like, you can't stand? They just light something in you and it's not good, where you're like, they can truly go fuck themselves, or you just can't take them on the show? That one person where just, like, thinking about them gets you heated?
Well... Let me see. Well, one, a trigger. Well, I mean, I've never really been here for Teresa.
Ooh.
Yeah. Her energy is very much, and I think actually this might tie to your previous question, because I think, like, you know, she's so explosive. Uh-huh. And that's very triggering to me because I am a fiery Sag, and okay. I have that part of me too, that like I could flip a table on your ass. Mm-hmm. But like, so yeah, she's very triggering to me because she's so explosive. Yeah.
Why is that triggering to you? If you, because you feel like you have that too. And
cause I'm fiery. Yes. Yeah. So yeah. So she gives me anxiety. It just gives me anxiety.
Wow.
Yeah, don't you feel that when you watch any of her scenes? She's like, just even just how, I mean, I love, like, obviously her storylines are amazing, but she just gives me anxiety. She's so intense. It's just like, oh my gosh, she makes me want to flip a table because she's so intense. Yes.
I definitely felt antagonistic vibes from her so heavily during the Strippergate seasons that I found it almost unwatchable, because she had so much rage that to me felt misdirected and not coming from any kind of empathetic place when it came to the ways in which her strained relationship with her brother affected his own relationship with her parents, and the void that her then husband filled in that, mm-hmm. which I thought was really unhealthy. And so I really strongly disliked her. And then something happened in like the last couple seasons. And I've said this to some of my, like, you know, AG co-hosts who've been on a couple times who are disgusted by this, but like, I'm like, you know, I almost enjoy the, I do. I'm not even going to say almost. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to be authentic. I'm going to be an authentic person right now and say that, like, the Teresa of this season, for example, I'm almost charmed by, while I disagree with everything that she's doing, because I think it's like almost charming. Like, she is keeping to things, and we see elements of stuff where it's like she says stuff maybe with a laugh, or like you could take it as a joke, but we all know she's not joking.
Exactly.
Like, well, you could have been a better friend. Like, if you didn't like what I was doing, you should have been a better friend and stopped me, or you should have been a better friend and said something else in return. Where it's like, I don't know, she just feels like it's like
it's anxiety. So she gives me anxiety, and like that's why she's triggering to me, because I whenever I'm watching a scene with her, I'm like, oh my god, how would I respond mm-hmm. to that? And I know mm-hmm. I would be matching fire with fire. So it just, it like, I'd be like, girl, I could not be on a show with her. It would just be, we would be like fighting. We would be fighting.
What do you think about this whole, I love that. I would love to see that show. What do you think about her dynamics with Jackie? About this, there's finally someone who's able to take on Teresa full
time. Well, yeah, it's good TV. That's what I think. It's
they
good TV.
They needed it.
Yeah.
People it's are anxiety, so anti-Jack.
But it's yes. good TV. It's good TV, yeah.
And people are so anti-Jackie, and it's like I've seen a lot of tree hugger content creators and tree hugger fans, and I just think, like, you do it. Like, you want to be a tree hugger 100%. You have every right. But just appreciate the fact that we have a narrative in which to even take sides, which in New Jersey is
right.
a very unequal, uneven playing ground, where some of the most explosive arguments or elevated stakes have been really, really unhealthy to watch. Like, just unhealthy to these people's families.
It is.
In
just
very
insane.
Genuine ways. And this, I'm like, I don't know, like the Jackie stuff with, there's got to be something there, not in the sense of Evan stepping out on her, but just in how she is imagining how he, a finance guy, would be harmed professionally by rumors that he was cheating when he didn't seem that concerned about his professional life when she joined Real Housewives. This is a part of it.
Exactly. They really made a mountain out of a molehill with that whole thing. I mean, that the rumor or whatever somebody allegedly said to Teresa. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's crazy. But I mean, she's also, again, somebody who's trying to feel out mm-hmm. the lay of the land. So I think that's mm-hmm. a little bit of what's going on with her is that mm-hmm. she's new, and so she's trying to feel out her positioning, and mm-hmm. I think that people that feel very invested on like making a name for themselves on the show, there's certain plot line you're going to just run with, right? Even if it's not like, she might know that her husband, I mean, obviously, like you said, he agreed to be on, or that she was going to appear on
right,
the show.
Which is a family decision.
It's a family decision.
Family's a part of it.
So obviously he knows there's things that are going to be discussed, whatever. So she might know that he really is not like losing sleep over this. However, she needs a storyline.
I mean,
she needs a story.
Totally. Yeah. I also think he's probably really upset about this, which still doesn't negate the fact that you signed up for Real Housewives. I understand you could be upset about this.
You think he's really upset about it?
I think there has to be something there. I don't understand how the world of finance, where morality is not even close to being as important as making people money at whatever cost and whatever you do on your time or even on theirs, they're probably okay with as long as you're making them money. Like, that is not an obscene idea. That is the reality of the large majority, I would say, of the finance world. I also do think that if he found out that someone was trying to harm him in some way, yeah, he was probably, and by harm, I mean like reputation, which doesn't to me have to do with professional stuff, but just hearing that somebody is saying some shit that isn't true, I could see being upset about that. The level of upset that they both are is slightly odd to me because they are presenting an alternate reality in which morality should be trusted on under all terms, where we don't do these things. And it's like, this is not the franchise to think these things aren't done, because that has been the foundation for many of these people, relationships, family.
Exactly.
So important.
Exactly.
On New Jersey, including talking about whether or not they're a piece of shit.
But that's like, why I don't think he's really as upset as she's making it out to be.
I think he could be a little bit upset. And I think that that upset is disingenuous, because I think you need to know what, I think at this point in the game, like 10,000 generations into Housewives,
right?
I get how it can hurt your feelings and piss you off. And frankly, you should be pissed off, because that also serves the narrative of the show. She's volleying something to you. We need to see your response to that. And
right.
The fact that we didn't get to see any of that PS because she wasn't filming is slightly annoying, but I get it. Boundaries, like, God bless.
But maybe they are that upset, but also too, maybe because they're not used to it yet. I don't know, but I don't even know if I think that he's really, I don't know. I think that she needs, what else would she be talking about? What else would be her storyline?
I don't know. I mean, Teresa is her storyline.
Literally, if she was not beefing with Teresa, exactly. So, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's a great season of Jersey so far. I'm extremely into it.
I'm a couple episodes behind, but yeah.
Oh yeah, you are. But it's okay. I mean, it's a really solid. It's a solid season, which I feel so much appreciation for. I think the last episode of Atlanta 2 was really solid. And Dallas is, to me, a tough watch. And there are questions even on, like, is Brandy going to show up to the reunion, which I think is a valid question. I don't know whether or not she is. But it's a tough watch because at the end of the day, something on New Jersey happens and Teresa and Jackie may agree to disagree, or they may agree to continue hating each other until the end of time, which seems like the bigger possibility here. And then you look at something like Dallas and you can't get to an agree or disagree. It really feels like the side that needs to be shared is Tiffany's perspective, because so much of her storyline has been seen through Brandy's experience and eyes, which is so mismatched.
I can't stand Brandy. She's just, that her energy is not good. I really would not care if she came back or not, or if she, I mean, she's just, I don't like the position that she's put Tiffany in.
Tell me more about that. What kind of position do you think that she's
just always Tiffany it's in? Like Tiffany, because Brandy is so afraid now of how she comes across and what, you know, it's just, it's so annoying. It's so annoying because now it's almost like Brandy's putting out this energy of like that she's afraid of how she comes across and what she says and how Tiffany's going to take it. But then that in turn puts Tiffany in a position of where now she feels like she has to tiptoe and everything she says is scrutinized, because also they're closer to Brandy than they are with her. It's just, it's so messed up. Brandy is toxic. She's toxic. I don't like her. I think that, yeah.
She's always been toxic, or do you think that this, maybe again, it could be the absence of Leanne? Talk about opening space. It's
exactly
not positive.
Yeah.
You know, where the Leanne was always the I don't want to say, I want to say target, but I don't mean that in any way of like Leanne being a victim. I mean in the sense of attention.
Yes.
Where she has been like the target of attention because she has taken up a lot of space and energy. And we've seen that be very exactly. toxic. And now that Leanne is gone, which all of these women seem very invested in happening, guess what? That space is now available. And it looks like Brandy is, I mean, essentially everyone else or the majority of the cast aside from Tiffany and Deandra are interested in taking up space in the worst possible way where they're like, we are going to be the complicated people doing the shitty stuff, you know, and they're doing it unconsciously or subconsciously rather.
They're doing it subconsciously. And that's what just makes it worse because they don't see it. They don't see it. Right. So it makes it way worse. Yeah, it's not a good look. You know, they are so bothered by Tiffany doing the most basic things. Like she can't do anything right. You know, I love me some Tiffany Moon. She is a boss. And I don't even know like if people outside of Dallas even realize just how boss she is. Like the Moon family is just next level. Okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about them? I've read a piece about them.
Yes. So they own the Sam Moon jewelry stores. Oh my God. This is what I was trying to tell somebody about this. I'm like, no, you guys don't realize the Moons in DFW. It's like, so they,
a very big deal.
Yes. I mean, in every shopping center, there's a Sam Moon gigantic store that sells like all the costume jewelry you could ever want, luggage, all kinds of stuff. Like, and it's in all the suburbs of Dallas, like the wealthy suburbs too, Frisco, Plano, like everywhere, everywhere. When I got my first reporting job in Dallas, my stepmom took me to Sam Moon, bought me like $200 worth of jewelry so that I could wear this like, you know, just all the costume jewelry sparkly that thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they're just legit and they just have so many like also like development and stuff in Dallas. I think they're benefactors of Dallas Baptist University, if I remember correctly. So the Moon family is a big name in Dallas. Huge. So she is bossed up. So not only did she marry into the Moon family, but then she's a doctor herself. I just love me some her. She blows them all out of the water, like on a personal level. Like she's the real deal. And that's why they're so bothered by everything she does. And it's just so painful to watch. Like she can't talk about anything. She literally can't talk about anything.
It's so interesting that they all have chosen, or the majority of them, again, taking Deandra out of this, they've chosen to shame her about the very things that her mom gave her no choice but to do. Get the job at all costs to be the doctor, which then Carrie with a K shames her for when they were having this wild conversation about COVID. You know, be financially successful and independent so that you can support the family but also be seen as a success, which is very important. And then they critique her showing her closet, which is something that all of them have done
exactly
on the show. It's like there's no way for her to win because she's living up to her mom's expectations, and those very expectations are equal to the judgment that her co-stars have like leveled against her.
Exactly. So
the very thing that she had no choice but to achieve, that she worked her ass off to achieve, she's in like a very small group of people who has gotten, you know, who's been incredibly academically successful and now has this incredible job that's like 80 hours a week or something insane, like wildly important and demanding job. And these women, she joins this reality TV show and she lands herself in an environment thinking she's going to have a little bit of fun, do something totally outside of any expectations, and they all punish her for it.
They're intimidated. They're doing too much. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's just like, who could imagine that? Like literally you can't say or do anything. And it's just It's crazy. Because like you said, she's not doing anything that they haven't done, like show around their home, show this, like people are trying to get to know her and see where, how she's living. Like that's part of the show. You guys are literally on a show called Real Housewives, where we want to see your houses and your and your shit. So, I mean, like, duh. But when it's her, it's a problem. I hate it. It's just cringe.
What's your favorite franchise? What's your number one go-to, your happy place?
Well, right now it's Potomac, I would say.
Oh, and where did you find yourself this past season, Monique v. Candy? So hard. Worse.
It's so hard. I'm really not a fan of either of them.
Your team, The Table, which was coined by Monty Marcus, a podcaster, and I say the same. I am team The Table.
Yeah.
Team The Table in that altercation.
I'm really not relationship. Team Monique or team Candace, because they're both problematic for different reasons. Wendy's another housewife that I know too. I left that out, I guess.
Oh, Dr. Wendy. Yes. We love some Dr. Wendy here on AG.
So yeah, I do know Dr. Wendy a little bit just through media circles and stuff. We've met a couple times. So I, you know, was happy to see Dr. Wendy show up and represent you know, that space. Brought a beautiful family, so that was cool. But to me, it's all about, you know, Karen. And I thought Karen's storyline with Ray this year was like kind of is very endearing and like
totally. I was about to say super sweet.
Yeah, and just like again, the authenticity, the realness, you know, of like seeing a woman at that stage of her marriage and kind of. You know, she was really hurt when he like didn't say he loved her or whatever it was. Yeah, I just thought that was cool to see this season. So, and then obviously,
Robin? Oh. No. Ashley?
Ashley, but don't Robin could Robin. Robin's not giving me much. Robin's not giving me much. I mean, yeah.
I want a hat.
No, that fake hat business was just too much for me.
I want one. And I don't wear hats. I don't have a hat.
I don't have a head for Robin, hats. Yeah, Robin.
My head is too big.
Robin in those hats. I can't. But Ashley Darby. Michael Darby was the show for me. I mean, I live for Michael Darby drama. I really do. I live for Michael Darby drama. It's really good. That last episode was dynamite. What will he do next? I can't wait. I can't wait to see what Michael Darby will he'll do. So that's why I love Potomac. I feel like, yeah, Michael Darby literally makes the show for me right now. Because he's such a mess and it's so good.
Listen. This conversation with you is definitely not messy in any way. And I'm so appreciative for you coming on Andy's Girls. Where can people find out more information on you, possibly follow you online? Where can they go?
You can go to my website, GiselleFelps.com. And I'm on Twitter at my name, at Giselle Phelps. I am on IG at GJP Media. My IG is really boring compared to my tweets though. So I would say,
keep that in mind.
Yes. Like if you want to find me talking reality TV, giving opinions, the Twitter streets are definitely where that activity is happening. So at Giselle Phelps, GiselleePhelps.
Yeah. And I have to ask you, we have a special segment on Andy's Girls called Small Business Satchels, where we highlight our favorite small businesses, which could be a restaurant, store, company, salon, whatever it is, a place that means something to you so that we can highlight small businesses that in our area or elsewhere that need our support now more than ever. What is your small business satchel? Tell me.
Mine is the Harlem Candle Company. Yes. Wow. Love Harlem Candle. So Harlem is just so near and dear to my heart. I've lived in Harlem for the last what year is it? 6 years, I guess. I don't know. I'm like, it's 2021. Great. I'm out in LA right now. Been here for a few months. And one thing I have remind me of Harlem is my Harlem candle on the kitchen counter. Every day I see my Harlem counter. It's a little piece of Harlem. But beautiful Black-owned business, women that created them. And the scents are super cool. They're all named after like iconic Harlem places and people. So definitely check that out. Love me.
And what's your favorite scent? Do you have a favorite?
Oh my gosh. I love the Duke Ellington candle.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I mean... And the legacy, just to say the Duke Ellington, it's like fucking class and a kid, class yeah. AF.
And then there's a gold Lennox one too that I like. And there's a, never mind. Actually, I like, it's hard. I like the Savoy too, because there's a Savoy candle that's named after the Savoy Ballroom. Yeah. Oh my God. Get into it.
Well, guys, I'm going to include the info in the show notes for this episode on how you can support Harlem Candle Company.
Yes, the Harlem Candle Company. Yeah.
I have a listener satchel from Andrea who sent me in a satchel. And guys, this is a woman run podcast. I'm a woman run small business, my cackle. And so they sent in a satchel and they were like, I don't know if this counts as a satchel, but I 100% think it does because you got to shoot your shot. And this is a satchel from Andrew who says, hey, Sarah, I'm a big fan and longtime listener. Thanks for the entertainment you bring to my life each week. I am launching a podcast on March 31st, Adult Child, which will be about the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family through the lens of my own experience. At 9 years sober and 9 years of dysfunctional romantic relationships, I finally come to terms with the true impact my childhood had on me. And guys, listen, this counts as a small business. She's starting her own podcast. It is a journey. I got to tell you, I wish Andrea, either, both,
yeah,
pronounce it. Best of luck with your new pod, and I will include a link in the show notes for AGs to listen. And I just want to say, good for you to send this in and say, listen, I want to promote myself and what I'm working on. And she's taking a leap of faith and talking about something. It sounds incredibly vulnerable. And I got to say, best of luck, mazel, kudos to you, Andrea. So I'll include info on Adult Child in the show notes for the episode. And my satchel is one of my favorite restaurants in New York. It is a vegan Italian restaurant in the East Village called Sestina. It's a part of the Matthew Kenny cuisine empire of incredible, feels like 5-star or just really almost like luxe vegan dining experiences, because all of the ingredients are magical and it doesn't feel like fancy in that way, but just in the sense of like great, well done, imaginative food that's all plant-based and plant-driven. He is a genuine genius, and they opened Sestina right at the beginning of, or near the beginning of COVID, in just one of those terrible moments of timing, and had to close for the last several months due to COVID and dining restrictions in New York. They're reopening April 1st. I'm going to be there the first day that they reopen, aka the weekend following. And I'm so excited to see them back in New York City. I have literally, when they said that they were closing, somebody who works for the company was like, you know, it's happening. Like, we're going to, you know, buckle down for the storm ahead when it comes to COVID and also winter times. And I like literally ran there the day that they were closing. And I am not fucking with you when I say I ordered, I don't know, 9 items maybe.
Wow.
And I had them in my fridge and literally had Sestina for every single meal I dragged the shit out of this. And I think because it was plant-based, like nothing went bad. I literally had it for every single meal and was like, oh, it's so good, but also this is the last time that I'd have gluten-free penne vodka for a minute, so let me appreciate it. So guys, if you are a New Yorker or live outside of New York and you have a Matthew Kenny restaurant near you, I highly recommend it. He also has Double Zero, my favorite vegan pizzeria, next door to Sestina, and next door to that, Bar Verde, his Mexican joint, which is so fucking good. The nachos are insane. And so I highly recommend, if you're a New Yorker or near one of his places, that you check it out. And more info on Sestina specifically can be found in the show notes for this episode. Also, guys, PS, Loverboy promo continues. Participate, enter the giveaway on Instagram, and you could win the variety pack of the absolutely fabulous, and you know this company, you know them well, the Loverboy Spritz variety pack. You know it's owned and operated by Kyle and Amanda from Summer House, and I'm so excited about this giveaway. It ends very, very soon, and the only way to participate is on my Instagram at Dame Galley. The contest ends Wednesday, March 31st at midnight Eastern EDT. So absolutely sign up and join, and you should be following me on Instagram anyway at Dame Galley. Join the Patreon, get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more. And listen, new favorite person, you were a delight. Thank you so much for coming on Andy's Girls. This was so awesome.
Thank you for having me. Girl, I'm like, we almost talked for 2 hours. My texts are blowing up. EKW was texting me about something going on Clubhouse. I got to call her as soon as we hang up. I'm like,
and tell her to come on Andy's Girls. Be like, EKW, I was just on this amazing podcast and I lost track of turtle time because I had so much fun. So you should get in touch with my new best friend Sarah and come on the show.
I will. I'll put it in her ear. I'll put it in her ear for sure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. This was a joy. Guys, stay safe. Double mask if you can and get the vax. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.